Welcome to another edition of That's History. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov, and joining me once again in studio is New York University historian Jonathan Zimmerman. Jonathan, welcome as always.
Good to be here as always.
We're hearing a lot of stories in the run-up to the Boston Marathon, 1 year, of course, since the tragic bombings last year. The federal government is seeking the death penalty against accused bomber Dzhokhar Tsarnaev. You say that's a mistake, and not just because you don't support the death penalty, but because you say it's a political move.
Well, yeah, I think it always is. If you look backwards in time and you look at when and how the death penalty has been used by the federal government, you find that political considerations almost inevitably entered in.
In an essay that our listeners can read now at newsworks.org, you say there are numerous examples throughout history of the death penalty being used disproportionately when a crime is sort of in the news. The first one is a slave trader in 1861, not exactly a sympathetic character.
Yes, this fellow's name is Nathaniel Gordon. He's from Portland, Maine. And he was arrested in 1861 for transporting 900 Africans for the purpose of enslaving them. Now, the important background here is that after 1809, the transatlantic slave trade was banned in the United States. You weren't allowed to import or export human beings. But the other important piece of background is people did it. Generally with impunity. And even when they were arrested, they were often pardoned. The previous president, James Buchanan, in the late 1850s, he actually pardoned somebody who was sentenced to death for slave trading. But once the Civil War began, of course, the political landscape changed. So when this guy Nathaniel Gordon was arrested and convicted, he's sentenced to death and he appeals to the president, Abraham Lincoln, to commute his sentence, and Lincoln says no. So he becomes the one and only human being executed for trading in human beings.
The same year that Nathaniel Gordon is executed, Abraham Lincoln signed off on more than three dozen executions of Lakota Sioux Indians for a massacre committed against whites who settled on their land. You said that also had to do with politics.
Very much so. I mean, the Lakota attacked white settlers who, let's be clear, were stripping their reservation lands of vital natural resources. Close to 400 of them were arrested on charges of rape and murder, 303 convicted. And then Lincoln, interestingly, commutes the sentences of all but 38 of them. Now, it's important to understand this is in 1862, and he has a bunch of considerations. One of them has to do with Europe and whether Europe is going to recognize the Confederacy or not, which was a huge consideration at the time. And he was afraid if all these Indians were put to death, that would be set a bad mark on the United States that it would, or on the Union rather, that it would sway Europe towards the Confederacy. But there was also more. He was afraid that if he commuted all of the sentences, that there would be vigilantism among whites in Minnesota. In fact, three of the Lakota convicts had already been murdered by white mobs. So this is the kind of political balance that he's engaged in making this decision.
So in deciding to execute just 38 of the 303 who were convicted, he's saying, I'm being hard on this crime. You know, the government has done its job. You don't have to go out and commit murder.
Exactly, yes. And that it was the largest mass execution in the history of the United States.
More recently, Julius and Ethel Rosenberg were executed for espionage, the only Americans executed for that crime.
Yes, and this one is fascinating, too, for a number of reasons. First of all, there was a longstanding debate about whether Julius Rosenberg passed secrets to the Soviet Union. That debate is pretty much over. He did, and we know this because of various transcripts that were released after the end of the Soviet Union. But now the more interesting question has to do with why was he, of all people, put to death? And there is no question that it had to do with the political climate. Keep in mind, he's convicted in 1951, and this is on the heels of the Soviets testing an H-bomb, China, quote, falling to the Maoists. And if you look at the sentencing judge, what he says when he's sentencing Ethel and Julius Rosenberg to death, he says, the deaths of Americans in Korea, where, of course, a war had begun, is on your shoulders. And the deaths of Americans in future conflicts will be on your shoulders. So the sentencing judge actually links this sentence to the political climate of the day quite explicitly.
Is there a legitimate argument to be made, John, that some of these crimes carry more weight during times of conflict? And I'm thinking specifically of our current war on terror.
Well, they do carry more weight. I think the difficult question is whether they should, and I would say no. Look, I'm not making any brief, of course, for a slave trader and definitely not for a terrorist in Boston. But it doesn't seem to be legitimate, politically or morally, to single out those people because of the political climate of the time. I think we've made that error before. Again, in no way am I making any sort of brief or do I shed any kind of tear for this guy Tsarnaev, and I hope he spends the rest of his life in a prison. But I also hope that he's not executed, because historians spend a long time thinking about how future generations will judge us. And my fear is that if we put this fellow to death, if we single him out, whereas many other murderers are not put to death, people will say of us exactly what I'm saying about the era of the Rosenbergs and the era of Nathaniel Gordon, that we chose this person for the ultimate penalty because of the political winds of the time.
That's Jonathan Zimmerman, historian at New York University, joining us on That's History. Jonathan, thanks as always.
Thanks.